Hi everyone, welcome back to Dear Asian Girl. I'm Abby.
I'm Eden.
And I'm Megna.
Yes, we have all of our beautiful co-hosts here today because we are here to take you on a journey from across the world, different countries, all around, focusing on one theme, rice and spice. Now, we have sent our whole team of researchers and other co-hosts on a mission to show us their favorite food and shout out the location that they're at and kind of explain the value of the ingredients used and the importance of the location that they are settled in. Now, I'm so very excited for this episode. It's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. And so I hope you can enjoy getting to hear from the rest of our team. And I hope you stick in for later, where we do a longer interview with one of my favorite pho places in Seattle. Now, let's go take your brain into the airplane and let's travel the world.
Oh, that's so cute.
Hello. So our first stop on this plane is a little info dump, a good one, just about the background of rice and also of spice. So I'll cover rice and then Megna will go into spice and then we can go into all the fun little segments and other stops on our plane ride. So I'll cover rice first. So as many people will know, rice originated in Asia, but the exact country or region isn't really known, although we kind of have historical traces in China, Southeast Asia, India. But we can conclusively say that the first recorded mention of rice was in 2800 BCE in China, and that the earliest archaeological record of rice is from 7000 to 5000 BCE. And then from here, rice dispersed across West Asia and Europe by the end of the first millennium BCE. And this rice and the process of rice farming allowed societies to transition from nomadic hunter-gatherers to stay-at-home farmers, which increased the population and increased the levels of urbanization, which gave us loads more cities. And today, 90% of the world's rice is grown in China, India, Indonesia, and Bangladesh, which means that about one half of the world is dependent on rice as a staple ingredient, which is very, very fun. And that's practically all of East and Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, little fun facts as well from our researcher, May. The ancient name for rice in India was Dhanya, excuse my pronunciation if that's wrong, meaning
okay.
Sustenance
okay.
For the human race. Magnificent today, guys. And along with eating it as a grain, it can also be processed into many other things like oil, wine, and flour, which makes it even more prolific and important in cuisine.
So I still
that's
think it's wild.
Rice.
I think it's wild that rice can be turned into wine. Like,
oh, I was going to say it's a surprise that it can be turned into oil. Because, like,
oh.
rice wine vinegar, which is really
nice
as, like, an ingredient in things. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't think about the fact that rice wine was obviously a part of making rice wine vinegar. And I don't think I would like rice wine.
It's odd,
anyway.
You know. Yeah, sorry, keep going with your facts.
Anyway, no, that's it. Those are all the facts that we get today about rice. But I would love, Megna, to hear about some spice.
Okay, let's get into some spice history. History of spice. Okay, so some of the earliest spices and herbs were used for medicinal reasons, as well as food seasonings, like sesame and sesame oil. I also know that in my mom's cooking, she uses a lot of cardamom and turmeric, which also have a lot of medicinal purposes, like for like digestion and stuff, which is especially necessary if you eat a lot of lentils and have digestive problems, but it's fine. So spices are like nature's medicine, and the demand for spices created the first international trade routes and influenced world economy, which is the beginning of globalization, at least in the Eurocentric context in the 16th century. We know this. We all learn about the spice trade in world history. Spices were super in demand because I'm pretty sure, at least at this time, Europe didn't have access to spices, so they, journeyed across the world like we are now, or actually not like we are now, but to look for spices. And our researcher May actually observed through her research that the spice trade history is very like centered on the European perspective and how Europe traveled the world, went to all of these countries, colonized all these countries in the search for spices. And this like rarely ever acknowledges that these spices were already like huge staple ingredients in these Asian countries. Like these Asian countries had what Europe desired. And yeah,
I
we were on top of
mean,
that stuff.
look, to be frank, it's odd. It's like you guys chased down the world for spices and didn't use it in your food. Like, I don't
Embarrassing.
know. Makes me kind of like bummed out.
Yeah,
Like,
it's like, what was the purpose of all of that then?
what was the reason?
Yeah. And when I was actually like re reading this and reviewing this, I just kind of quick plug here. There's this science fiction work called Dune. It was a novel and then it recently turned into a movie in like 2021. I actually did a presentation in my class on Dune, and in Dune, it's a very like similar world structure in that there's this one planet that produces this thing literally called spice, and it's like the major commodity in the universe, in the Dune universe, and everyone's fighting over it, everyone wants it, the wealthy have a monopoly on it because it like extends life and makes you young and keeps you healthy and stuff, and people are basically addicted to it. And it's just really interesting to see how spices and the influence of spices in world history and like the Eurocentric context of spice or the Eurocentric perspective on spice translates to works of fiction and science fiction too, because like that spice also has medicinal properties, is also like the reason for the colonization of this planet, and it's like that's just interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you brought that up. But you know, guys, I've been waiting to say this pun. It's gonna feel like it's a little bit out of context, but let's continue to travel the world. We're the Dear Asian Spice Girls.
Oh my God, that was incredible, Abby. Oh my
Thank you
God.
so much. I'll be
Oh, I claim that.
well
Okay, so
I
to continue on our
yes.
journey, the spice trade had awful consequences, obviously. It was the reason for the colonization of the Americas, while explorers searched for shortcuts to South Asia, because obviously we all know the story of Christopher Columbus trying to find a way to India, but ended up in the West Indies instead. And again, this is super focused on Europe's gain rather than focusing on the things that Asia already had. And another important kind of research history fact on spice is that India's climate is one of the reasons why it has and still has it's so prolific of a spice producer because of climate change. Today is a big threat to the spice economy and spice farmers, so we might see a unfortunate decline in spice in the future.
I can't let this
Don't say that,
happen.
Magda.
I can't let that happen.
Okay,
Okay,
sorry,
back to
we don't
Vortos.
we throw back to last episode. We are not manifesting that. That is not what we are doing here today. Amen. Okay, so lastly, we have some quick fun facts on spice as a staple ingredient. So spice is so ubiquitous today that it's easy to forget that it was so like not used around the world. Like it was focused and centered in certain regions of the world, but now like everyone has access to spice. You can go to your local grocery store and buy all kinds of spices. But again, just quick reminder that spice is a staple in Asian cuisine, and we're here to celebrate the history of Asian cuisine in this episode. So it's just a quick shout out to all Asian cuisines everywhere for, using spice and just being so amazing all the time.
Yeah.
And modern day spice usage commercialization is not as monopolized, like we said, and there's been also an increase in the research usage in cooking with spices for health benefits in modern day. Though it's really important to note that, again, we've been using spices in Asian culture medicinally since the very beginning, so it's not anything new for us. Just we had a greater awareness for it, and now that awareness is thankfully spreading, so that's great.
Yeah. Hey, spices rock. Shout out spices. Love that.
Yeah.
You can't have the staple base of rice without the spice, you know. I love, the ideal combination where it's like me insert thing here and then a side of rice. Like there's something about it. They just come into this perfect marriage, and I am so happy to be Asian.
I completely agree. Like I could eat a bowl of white rice. Like I love white rice, but even more than white rice, I love chicken rice. And I don't know if anyone outside of like if anywhere like outside of Southeast Asia or like even outside of like Malaysia and Singapore specifically does chicken rice. Like there's no chicken in it. It's just the rice that we always eat with a meal, like with like Hainanese chicken rice, so it's called chicken rice, but it's just rice that's like cooked and infused with garlic, ginger, lemongrass, like everything good.
Ooh, it
And then
sounds
it
so
just makes
good.
plain rice, which is already a 12 out of 10, into like a 24 out of 10. It is so good. Oh my god, now I really want chicken rice.
My mouth
God,
is
yes.
watering. My mouth is fucking watering.
It's actually kind of
Well.
crazy when you think about it how like rice has been in your life for like the entire, like for me, for example, rice has been something I've eaten for like almost my entire, I think like my entire 19 years of life. Like I remember as a kid, my favorite absolute dish was called, I called it dachamamam, which is definitely not what it's called, but it's basically like rice and this thing called curd. I'm not sure if you guys have curd in your cuisines, but it's like this like milk-based, like kind of more solidified kind of yogurt-ish kind of thing, and you use it to basically like cool down some of like the spicy stuff in Indian cuisine. And I used to just inhale curd and rice. And also like there's this thing like this pickled mango kind of thing that I used to put in the rice, which is like the spice aspect. I could never just eat just plain curd and rice. I'd have to have the little spice in it.
I mean, hey, fermented item and rice or something pickled, a side of white
Oh my
rice with a
god.
little thing of kimchi. My cousins, they introduced this to me when I was younger, and they're like, "You haven't had butter rice before, right?" And I'm like, "What?" And it's like a nice butter mixed into like a hot, like warm bowl of like freshly cooked white rice, and you can season it however. And I'm like, oh, this is. I like had my first bite as a kid, and I'm like, oh, I feel like royalty. Like, this is decadent. I love it.
Ooh. Also, I love how like we can just stick any word in front of the word rice and it becomes a dish. Like chicken
So
rice,
real. Oh, yes.
curd rice, butter rice, lemon rice.
She
I
being
love rice.
rice, yeah, she's amazing. She does it all.
She's versatile.
She's
Oh my god.
versatile.
Love that word.
Well,
Oh,
you know,
rice.
everyone, thank you so much for giving the spice rundown and the rice rundown. Now we're gonna lift up that, we're bringing back the plane metaphor. We're bringing up our brains and we're heading it to lift off. And we're gonna go see where everyone wants to take us in the world on this journey of rice and spice.
Hi, I'm Mei, a podcast researcher for Dear Asian Girl, and today I'm eating Lanzhou La Mian, a Chinese hand-pulled noodle soup that developed all the way back in the Tang Dynasty in the city of Lanzhou. One thing that makes this dish so delicious is the broth. To get that distinct flavor, chefs use a meticulous combination of spices, including cloves, Sichuan peppercorns, star anise, nutmeg, fennel, and licorice. Because of the complexity of the broth, not to mention the hand-pulled noodle technique itself, this recipe is actually really difficult to authentically replicate in a home kitchen. Knowing this made me appreciate the dish even more, as I was really able to stop and savor the flavors of the broth and all the spices that go into its creation.
Hey guys, Eden here. I am very excited to be heading to Fat Rice UK or just the food market in general today. I'm in Bristol in the UK and we've got this food market that happens pretty regularly down by the harbour.
I can see the stalls now. I'm very excited. I think I'm going to get to Fat Rice, which is a Malaysian comfort food stall. It's built a pretty good rapport with the Chinese Malaysian and just the Malaysian population here in Bristol. And I've tried it once before with my family, but I've not had it in ages. I'm not sure what I'm going to get yet, but I'm really excited. It looks pretty busy. Oh my God, just walked into a crowd of pigeons. I will chat to you when I'm ordering. Hiya. Can I get the tau yu bap, please? Sorry?
Have you had
a food
before?
Oh, yeah. I'm Chinese Malaysian. I was here with my family like months ago now. So I've not been in a while, but...
I see. So, do you want the chili sauce that we serve with?
Yes, please. Can I have it on the side? My girlfriend's white, so...
There you go. So...
Thank you.
Two spoons?
Yes, please. Thank you so much. So I got tau yu bap. They had kunyit chicken and something else as well, but I got tau yu bap immediately when I saw it, which is like a soy sauce braised pork belly. So I guess the spice is soy sauce, among other things. And there is in fact rice, so I'm hitting rice and spice in fact. And it is amazing. I got it because this is something I really enjoy back in Malaysia. And we make a version of this at home, like my parents make it here, but it's nothing like this, so this feels pretty authentic. When my mum makes tau yu bap, she doesn't make it with pork belly, she makes it with chicken, which kind of defeats the purpose of like the whole texture of tau yu bap, but it's because me and my siblings don't really like the fatty, like jiggly parts of pork belly, as much as we do actually like the pork, like the leaner parts. So we've always made it with chicken, which is not very authentic. So it is nice having it with pork belly for once.
Hello, everybody. This is Meghna, one of the new co-hosts for Dear Asian Girl. Right now, I'm in Thousand Oaks, California, and I'm about to go into Namaste Spice Land, a really popular Indian grocery store / restaurant in Southern California. Growing up, I always got all of my Indian groceries here, and more often than not, my family and I would always pick up a quick bite to eat before we left at the food vendor stationed inside. Today, I'm going to be eating one of my favorite things to get at Namaste Spice Land, called pani puri. Pani puri is a very popular street food / snack food in South Asia, made of a hard, crispy, and crunchy outer shell called the puri that you kind of make a hole in at the top, and then you pour in this essentially flavored water called pani, which is water mixed with spices like mint or masala or coriander or cumin. That's why it's called pani puri. You can also add other things inside the puri, like tamarind chutney or chickpeas. I love eating pani puri just because it's so fun to break open the puri and spoon in all the yummy stuff and then eat it all in one big bite. That crunch you get is just so, so satisfying.
Mmm. It's good.
Oh my gosh. This is one of my favorite pho's in the city of Seattle, truly. I'll get us started just right now. Could I just have you guys introduce yourselves? Sorry.
Like right now?
Oh yeah, like right now.
Let the oldest, yeah. The older one.
Older.
Yes. I'm Quinn Pham from, I don't know, Fallback.
Yeah. I'm Yenvi Pham. fun feedback.
Very cool. Yes. Now, I'd like to say just congratulations, guys, for being finalists for the James Beard Award. I've been hearing that from not only my parents, but also online. I've been reading stuff. I like research. I'm doing
this. Oh, thank you.
Mm. Thank you, Abby.
Yeah, of course. It just sounds like really exciting. It seems like 2023 has been a pretty fruitful year.
I have no idea, but yeah, I think so. It's kind of like nothing really changes other than this recognition. Well, I guess, I don't know if things will change, mm-hmm. or it hasn't settled down yet. So we'll see. Settled in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everything's been in the making, you think, but now people are just being able to like see it a little more.
Like visibility, you mean? Yeah, of course. More like national visibility. And so that impacts the local community and how they see us too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty great. It's fun.
Yeah.
Like the other day at the bar, someone asked for a picture of Quinn.
Oh my gosh.
She's like,
selfie.
This happened to me.
Celebrity mode.
I don't know. Yeah, but I think 2023 for us is, I think it's going to be a good, exciting year. I think it's because all of our kind of our 2021, 2022 projects mm-hmm. are kind of like maturing, I guess, in a sense, you know, mm-hmm. where it's just not in a mode of just opening and trying to get the word out or anything. And so I think we're excited for it because I think we have, you know, like our creative energy through these two projects. You know, it's a little bit different than just our staple fallback, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're excited to do something a little bit different, introducing a new product, a new environment.
Can you guys tell me a little bit about the history of Fabak?
I let Quinn summarize.
Gosh, it started in 1980 when my parents came to America. And I think it was just out of necessity, really, you know, just to survive in this new country. They didn't really speak the language, you know, they had an education, but it didn't really translate, you know, to where they're at that time. And so they wanted to, they're used to working for themselves. They were entrepreneurs in Vietnam, and it's something that they were familiar and comfortable with, even in a country that they didn't know anything. And so I think that's kind of how they started, not with pho, but I think it quickly grew into that. And I think it's because they realized that they should give a product that they understand and that they're familiar and comfortable with, and that and I'm sure they thought that everybody else would love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
Gosh. So in Vietnam, they don't really have to, you don't cook these dishes like pho. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't learn how to cook it until she came to America. So, you know, before the Vietnamese community is pretty small. So mm-hmm. they used to have like parties and dinners at the house. And at that time, she would cook pho or, you know, soup. And then when her friends, like, you know, during the weekend, we had mass and we had Viet Hoa mm-hmm. and supermarket runs. And her friends would come in and ask, oh, why don't you make pho or something other than sandwiches. And that's how it kind of the transition. So I think they opened in like August and then they transferred to pho by October.
Yeah. You find what you're good at and you have immediately an audience and people to serve.
So even the boat, we opened the 4-year anniversary on the 20th mm-hmm. Of when they opened the original location. And so it's kind of like this kind of legacy thing, even with the opening of the chicken shop.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool. And then, you know, with what your parents did, how did you guys then decide to join the family business?
Because default.
And it's okay because you're doing great though. So that's all that matters.
Just kidding, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of stumbled upon us because they never really asked us to take over. It was mm-hmm. just kind of their thing, what they did to support the family, support us. But then I think we graduated college and it was just an opportunity. They needed some help. Yeah. And you know how, like, when they ask for help, you just get suckered into the whole thing and we just never left.
Pretty much.
No. Yeah. I mean, I do that with my mom, too. I help her. I'm like, I'm not qualified to be a dental assistant. Oh. But when she, like...
Yeah, when she needs your
when
help.
When she needs help.
Yeah, you just kind of jump in and do your thing. And
yeah.
That's kind of how it started. Our parents just growing a lot at that time, and they just needed some manpower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so who else would they turn to? Their children.
The best manpower, which is semi-free manpower.
Yeah. I mean, we couldn't quit on them, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's just stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's actually how I think all three, at one point my brother also kind of just kind of mm-hmm. worked for the family. Yeah.
Like, wow. After college, we just kind of, like, merged in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, during college, you know, I used to take the bus, like, come to the Greyhound for lunch rush and bus back to my afternoon classes. It's kind of like a normal thing.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. But that's so, that's very cool. And it's even cooler than to hear these things and, like, project in the future, which is, like, the present now, and being like, wow, look what you guys have, like, done so far. It's amazing. I know I'm, like, probably seeming like I'm showering you guys with compliments, but they are authentic. I wouldn't be saying it if I didn't feel it, truly. So, you know, with all these different restaurants that you've kind of helped build and put together, there, like I mentioned earlier, there's that consistent sense of creative authenticity within each location. So what are the kinds of values that you try to embody in what you guys are creating and the food that you are serving there? Take your time, by the way.
Well, I don't know, when I cook or create something for the menu.
That was good.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's yeah. Okay. I was like, this
moves. I don't know, I always try to create something that will be memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we go through so many renditions of test kitchen and recipe development and everything, but like, if it doesn't like linger in your thought after you've eaten it, it's not good enough.
So beautiful. Sorry, I get so emotional when people talk about food. No, that's amazing.
So, that's kind of like the anchor. The anchor is, do you remember, was it memorable? Was it something that you crave? That's always the anchor. Yeah.
It's lovely. Do you have anything to say?
I think we try to create something that, well, first, I think something that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first and foremost, right? Like, and things that are like, I don't know, gives us comfort, right? Like, I think we never try, well, because we're not chefs.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so we...
We're entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And so we don't... Like, you know how sometimes when you're... Chefs are so creative and they get all worked up and they want to create this beautiful dish and we're not like that.
Yeah.
We're more like, okay, we have this opportunity.
Yeah.
And what do we like? And what do you think is comforting for us? And it kind of... Even though each product is so different, that we could kind of bring the element of our culture in. For example, like our bar. That was actually opening out of necessity because we had the space and we didn't really know what to do with it.
Yeah. We needed something.
And we needed something. We're like, okay, so we have a restaurant. What goes with a restaurant? A bar.
Or a coffee shop. We're like, yeah, coffee shop's easier.
Yeah, she was debating about coffee shop. I said, let's just try the bar first. Okay. You know, it's the first introduction to it. We never had a real full-fledged bar. And then when we were thinking about the bar, we're like, well, let's just make it a Vietnamese bar. Because that's who we are. And so sometimes, but then I think the creative, like, that's kind of how it comes out. But when we think back about it, it's like, you know, we create these drinks because it tastes good to us. It's something like the, like, we have a coconut cocktail because, you know, coconut is so prominent in our culture.
Pandan.
And we got pandan, things that, flavors that we really like, you know. And
citrus forward.
Yeah. And we're just, it's just kind of amazing that other people like it too.
Yeah, we never put much thought into it. I think it just naturally happens. So what I don't think, I think what Quinn and I, our strengths are, is that nothing is really ever forced.
Yeah.
Or is done, I don't really, I feel like thoughtfully, and it just kind of happens.
Mm-hmm.
Without like really thinking about like what we're trying to get out of it. I think that's a big one. Yeah.
I mean, I think good taste is something where people have to really build it, but then also sometimes, you're kind of born with that. And I think very well you guys have great taste. Because otherwise, I don't think people then would like so much of what you guys are liking.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I mean, this has been so new for us because, I mean, pho is something that we can open easily. Yeah. Like, it's something we grew up with.
It's 40 years locations.
Yeah, we can do it with, like, our eyes closed. But all of a sudden, we realized, like, you know, we just wanted... Only out of necessity, because, like, for example, the boat is so close to a soup shop. We're like, well, we can't open pho here. So we have to come up with another concept, right?
Yeah.
And so it's been exciting. It's been challenging for us to try to come up with a new product that's not pho. Because that's kind of like who we are, right? Like,
We're a pho family.
We're a pho family. And also now we got a chicken and rice place.
I love it.
We got, like, a coffee shop here. And then
the bar.
And then the bar, you know, which is totally deviating from our pho place. But I think it's really given us an opportunity to, I don't know, try new things, play, and it's just, and the public, the city's really embraced it. I could honestly say, I think we've been very fortunate.
Yeah, very lucky with the support. Just, everyone's just so supportive.
Yeah.
And just like, okay, we do this for you.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are very easy people to want to turn and support. Not only because you guys guys are creating great food, but it's like great ambiance, like, and you guys are very charming people. Like, I understand, like, once again, my dad spoke very fondly of the both of you, but so in your, like, so sorry.
No, take your time.
The moment that I actually read something and I'm like, wait, I don't want to see that one. Well, that's so fun to hear, though, truly. I gotta ask, what's your favorite drink that you guys have kind of put together?
I know, it just depends on the week you're asking me. Like,
the day.
Yeah,
the
day.
Sometimes I'm like, oh, I want something creamy. Yeah. Sometimes I want something more, like, acidic. Like.
Yeah, but I think, honestly, we're very happy with all of our cocktails.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Like, none of the cocktails, I feel like it's an afterthought. Oh, we just have it.
Or it's mediocre.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything, like, has to be exceptional.
Yeah, I think and that's why it changes every week or every whatever. Like, I think I could drink any of our cocktails, and mm-hmm. I think, oh, yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah. You come back to, like, getting up at.
That's so great to hear. And so, as I was kind of talking about earlier, don't mind me, had to burp a little.
Do you want some more water?
This is just a limeade. It's okay. I have my water bottle down here, actually. Okay. That's okay. Don't worry about it. Got my big old water bottle. Gotta just... I don't like metal ones because I had braces for so long. So whenever I taste, like, a metal cup, sometimes I'm like, ah.
Braces.
Yeah, even if it's not there anymore. So as we kind of talked about earlier, like, Fabak... And I would say, like, even your family has a very, like, strong legacy in Seattle history. And maybe it feels a little, like, weird to have someone say that to you. But, I mean, I think you guys have done quite a lot in effect where someone can say that. But along with kind of helping build up the history of this area, how have you and your, like, how have you guys been helping with kind of advocating for Little Saigon? Like, especially when I go downstairs and I see everything down there. I'd love for you guys to kind of talk a little bit more about that side of your work.
Do you know who wheeled us in? It was Anthem from Tamarind Tree. So this is not like over a decade ago. We were at a neighborhood meeting mm-hmm. about, you know, converting one building to... like just a halfway transitional housing. Mm-hmm. And so he like sees us and we're like, new phrase, like, who are you? Yeah. And then he looped me into Friends of Little Saigon, mm-hmm. which is the neighborhood, like, kind of nonprofit. It was founded by the small businesses here. Mm-hmm. So downstairs you have Friends of Little Saigon Creative Space. And that is the reason why Hello Am happened. Mm-hmm. It was a necessity, again. Yeah, it kind of was, because, you know, we had the space, we needed to activate it and get, you know, it out to the public, not mm-hmm. just a small group of people that knew about it.
Yeah.
So the coffee shop was to lure the public into learning about the neighborhood. And, you know, because we are in transition, you know, mm-hmm. it's a rough area. It's still pretty rough. And so what does it look like 10 years from now, you know, mm-hmm. like, where are the new entrepreneurs coming in? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we keep the integrity of the history of Little Saigon mm-hmm. intact? And so we do it in little ways that we can, mm-hmm. yeah, with what we have.
Yeah,
I think part of it is also just us being on this tip corner of mm-hmm. Little Saigon.
Yeah,
and, anchor.
Yeah, and yeah. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, everybody has an opinion about Little Saigon in terms of, like, crime or in terms of diversity, you know, like,
everyone has an opinion of Seattle.
Yes. And everybody has either an opinion or a story or an experience here. And so even though some people don't think about it, but a lot of people go through this corridor, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like us being like at this very tip, and we feel, you know, we put a lot of pride in our buildings mm-hmm. and like the patio was
the patio
was to activate, because nobody hangs outside of Little Saigon, mm-hmm. right? Like, people drive, park, and go in.
Yeah.
But, you know, the cities plant beautiful cherry blossoms mm-hmm. down the road, you know, we're neighbors to Chinatown, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of, like, this intersection, so we feel like just us, like, you know, just having a, trying to, like, you know, create, like, a nice, beautiful corner. So mm-hmm. when people drive by, it's just, mm-hmm. I mean, it is part of our business, because, you know, we want people to stop in. We want people to be activating this community. We built this patio, and it's not very big, but
the whole point of the patio. And I was like, it's so small. But it's to make people feel like you could like hang walk out. By and yeah. hang out on Jackson
nothing
Avenue.
Nothing would happen to you.
Yeah, nothing. You know, this beautiful corner, cherry yeah. blossoms are in bloom. You can see Mount Rainier down on Rainier yeah. Avenue.
And it's, then like the activation of this space is like so much possibilities, because right now we have that park, which is kind of like the entryway to cut down to mm-hmm. this building, to Hello AM. But you know, there's so much potential in this area, and it's so close, and everyone kind of just drives through it. Mm-hmm. And so how do we kind of inspire mm-hmm. Like different types of business to even want to come back to this neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
Because our anchors are like Ten Sun Tofu, this us, this Lum Seafood, mm-hmm. you know, Hau House, we're there forever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Vietnam left. You know, that was a big one. So, you know, within the new developments, within the new transition, like, how can we kind of stay relevant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your favorite food in the general? And what is your favorite cultural food?
Vietnamese.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah,
same. Same.
It's really hard.
But what's your favorite dish then?
Oh, my gosh.
And if you can't do dish, maybe...
You know what? I really love pho.
Yeah.
I can eat pho every day, but it makes me really chubby. It, like, triggers all my, like, appetite.
I completely could, too. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's funny because we have customers. I mean, pho is one of those special dishes for us, but it's funny because I was talking to a customer last week. I'm like, I see him every day.
Yeah.
Every day. I'm like, are you tired of my food? He says, no. It's something that you think, that if you eat it once in a while, you're like, okay, pho, you know. But mm-hmm. when you start eating it like once a week, then it comes to, then all of a sudden your body feels like, oh, you need it twice a week. And then his point to me was that the more you eat it, it's just like, it's like, it's something that your body just keeps on wanting.
Yeah, I need to interview that guy. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, oh my gosh, me too. I feel very yeah. similar. There's something about a noodle soup.
We definitely have our regulars.
Yeah, we have people that at least like 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
For sure.
For years.
At each location, yeah. they have their spot.
That's so amazing.
They have their seat that they have to sit. Oh,
yeah. That's and so I think nice. It just says that, like, because there's very few dishes I feel like people can
yeah,
say
sure.
that about. But there's something about pho, like it's the noodles or the broth or mm-hmm. I don't know, the way it makes you feel after you eat it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's something that a lot of our customers, they're regulars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. I get it. Like, you talked about things like lingering, like food lingering.
Yes.
Pho lingers. Like, not only does it linger, like...
in your hair.
Yeah, but it's like, there's something about it where I'm like, oh, man, I just want to go into a nice food coma. I want to go take a nice warm nap. And it's like, I do not care if I smell right now like pho. It's almost making the nap experience better. Who knows?
Yeah. And, you know, this weather, I mean, this city and this weather, it really calls for pho,
oh,
right?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's made for it.
It's made for it. I mean, everybody, like, from, like, we always, when we used to go snowboarding up in the mountains, and you're just driving home, it's like 7 or 8 at night, and you just, all you want to do is just get a bowl of pho.
And everyone's in the snow gear.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
of the time.
Just
at soup shop, every evening, it's like, everyone is snowboarding.
Yeah.
There's something about, like, it's like when worms come up when it rains. That's
yeah.
like more, it's like me, I'm like, oh man, a bowl of pho right now would be really nice. It's like raining a little bit. I'm like,
Yeah.
But I think pho is also cool because it's kind of like a blank canvas.
Yeah.
Like, depending on how you doctor it with sauces or lime or, you know, basil, or I really don't like bean sprouts, but whatever you'd like, you know, it really changes the flavor profile of pho, and so kind of everyone's bowl is a little different.
Well, then, what's your guys' bowls? How do you do your bowls?
Basic.
Oh, I'm not.
I am basic. Purist. Purist.
Nothing?
Just a squeeze of lime and basil. No bean sprouts, too. Basil and just a couple of slices of jalapeno, and that's it. No sauces in my
no
pho.
Sauces.
Yeah.
Mine. This is why I'm the chubby one. I call us the 10. You get it? 1-0.
Oh.
No, no, I love it.
Okay.
She's gonna name herself.
I need it myself. Okay, my bowl, God, depending on the day, but I always have, you know, a little bit of everything. Get a little brisket, fatty brisket, steak, maybe some belly. And then, you know, I always have to have a side. Oh, yeah, also meatballs. But it has to be cooked for, like, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a side of pickled onions. So you get asked for pickled hanyam if you ever at the restaurant.
I will 100%
Yeah, and then I squeeze like, you know, the sriracha and hoisin on that as my dipping sauce for my meats. And I always have to have, if I'm going to do a small bowl, it has to be four limes and then three basil leaves, and that's it. And oh, lots of pepper.
You know, I love that. I'm a heavy lime girl. That's like my main thing. It's just, I like a lot of lime in mine. Oh my gosh. I really want to persuade my family so hard. Mom and Dad, okay, maybe I'll just meet you afterwards, but I know where I'm going to go.
It's Friday. Now. What are they doing?
I don't know.
It's relaxing.
Your mom's already downtown.
Yeah, that's true. And my dad's remote. My dad works at home now, so he could just take my brother with him. And we could
Okay. Every family dinner.
Well, I got to think of my game plan after that, but... So, what spices are essential to the perfect pho experience?
You mean in the broth?
Yeah, like, let's get into it. We're going spice mode.
You know what? It's funny because we've always cooked it, like, the only way I know how to do it is the way my family's done it. But then I started reading.
People put a lot of things in it.
I was like, oh, what was that? Oh, I was on Seriously. I was on Instagram. Where was I? And Seriously, and so they did a whole... thing. And I was I'm curious, you know, see what the other people put in. It's kind of like, it's up to interpretation, right? But I think the basics are always like onions, ginger, what is it, coriander, anise. Cinnamon, anise, cloves. I guess that's a lot, but
that's the basics.
Yeah,
that's what the basics.
Yeah. And then everybody else kind of, people put fish sauce. We don't. People put rock sugar. We don't.
A lot of we don't.
I mean, it's always like, I'm not going to be like, no, please, just lay out every single recipe you guys have so I can share it with the world. No, it's really interesting to hear because it's something that truly can be so customized, but I think you really found just like, you guys got the taste, like you got the right combination down.
Yeah, our bowl is very Southern inspired because my mom, she escaped in 1954 from the north to the south when she was about 12. So she pretty much grew up in Saigon.
Both are our parents.
Yeah, both
my parents. Even though they're originally from North Vietnam, they both fled, both family fled in 1954 to Saigon. And so they're very heavily influenced by Southern.
Mother was 5, dad was 12, I think. It was like one or the other.
Yeah. They were young.
Very young. Very young age. So like, you know, our pho isn't really pho back. Not very northern profile, but you know, it's where they are from. Yes.
Well, that's still really cool to hear. I'm like, ooh, it's so food is so cool. Anyways, so when you guys are kind of cooking, do you find yourself drawn to specific flavors? And like, maybe we can go into that. Like, what are those flavors and what do you think is like the reason why?
In terms of the spices or in terms of like
just flavors. And it can have to do with spices. Ooh. The whole salt, fat, acid, heat.
Yeah, MSG, everything. Everything has to be balanced. It has to be a little, you know, like you have the salt, the sweetness, the bitter, the same with like cocktails or anything. It has to be a balanced, like encompassing dish.
Right? Symbiotic.
That's a great word.
Yeah, I think so. And I think like even I always think we're simple, but then I look at our menu sometimes and I'm like I think I was like, oh, because you know, I like to, like Envy and I, we cook really differently.
Night and day.
Yeah, we're like night and day. We cook really differently, but I think whatever we create, it is balanced. Like you know, like we try to, you know, I like it more like Envy loves like a lot of different flavors and ingredients, and she's really adventurous with different types of food, and you know, and I'm just more like I like. You know, minimal and all this, but then I think about it, I'm like, oh, I need this. So it doesn't, I think I'm minimal, but it ends up not being minimal.
It's a persona, she wants me French.
So minimal, so clean, but I do want to add three more things.
Yes.
It's kind of missing something.
Yeah,
it is missing.
And it has to do with, like, at the end, I think we don't, since we're not really chefs, so we don't really know, like, certain rules, right?
Yeah.
Like, which I learned a lot. In the whole bartending world, like there's
God.
All
it's
these rules.
So
I'm like, what?
And it's so hard to follow.
Yeah. But then I'm thinking, forget that. Let's just end product.
It does taste good.
It has to taste good.
So I know that I kind of said that earlier, but now what kind of flavors do you guys like? We went from like flavor profile to balance, but like what kind of actual taste do you like? Whether that's like a certain spice, a certain ingredient.
we definitely like our food spicy. Mm-hmm. We add spice to a lot of our, like, whatever we, even if we're eating like fries, we'll put Tabasco in it.
Okay, Tabasco's like, I'm a huge hot sauce. Yeah. A vinegary hot sauce.
Yeah.
Vinegar and acids, like a lot of citrus.
A lot of, acid we like. Like things a little just
tart. When I was younger, I liked things very mild, which is like kind of like creamy and fat. Mm-hmm. But as I get older, it's a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, we like it all. We like sweets. We like it all. Like,
you can't ask us these questions.
I'm sorry. People have to know. People want to know.
We like it all.
Not particular.
I don't really love bitter stuff.
I get that.
Yeah, sometimes I'm kind of getting, it's a little hard to eat for me.
It's hard to eat.
Yeah.
Well, then what, lastly, this will be like my last question. I have like one fun one afterwards. Like, what would you say is a cultural weight to one of the ingredients that you guys use? Like, what's an ingredient that you think really carries a lot of history in itself?
Fish sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, there.
Yeah.
I have a friend who got it tattooed on her leg, like the nom, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think MSG. MSG runs through every. We even have a cocktail with it, you know.
We do.
Just to give it a little briminess, a saline. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's such a balanced and misrepresented spice.
So definitely fish sauce and MSG. So things that are complex and fermented. Anything that kind of gives it that pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's such a unique flavor, and it is so misrepresented. Just like Asians are misrepresented, which is like, it's a shame that it's so villainized, and it's like so obviously like the two are villainized with each other, and it's like, okay, well, you guys are missing out on one of the best things you could add to anything. So,
But I think it gets a bad rep because people overdo it, right? MSG is one of those things you can not overdo because it'll make you feel weird. Actually,
it does. Yeah. It gets you like kind of high.
So it's not the spice's fault; it's your fault.
Yeah, it's an American thing. Like, look at milk. Right? Mm. Like, hit the Italians, right? Yeah. So they don't drink cappuccinos and macchiatos after like 11 a.m.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're lactose intolerant, you could tolerate up to 150 milliliters of milk before going poo-poo. And so they only drink that in the morning because, that's as much the body can take. Wow. They're not drinking 20-ounce lattes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Exactly, because we grew up in America.
I am not lactose.
Yeah, me either, but I'm just letting you know.
My sister my sister started getting in her 20s, and I was like, not me though. And then I'm in my 20s now, and I'm like, yeah, right.
But in moderation, right? Mm-hmm. MSG, milk, dairy products, anything. You have to keep it under a certain amount for it to affect you negatively.
Yeah.
Balance.
Balance.
It's all about balance.